but he was gone. Rayanne drove me home, explaining how she'd made a last-minute decision to turn onto that street. Otherwise, she never would have spotted me. She was horrified by my bloodied appearance, but I was just grateful to be alive. She pulled into my driveway and said she'd be back soon to check on me. I insisted on walking to the front door by myself, my way of proving that I really wasn't a weakling, even if I did just get my tail handed to me. I hobbled into the house, and my mom took one look at me and went nuts. I felt different around her now. I was actually glad she was home, and sober. It would have been difficult to bring up what I'd just learned about her, even on a normal day, but now definitely wasn't the time. She pulled out a first aid kit I never knew we had and demanded to know who hurt me. I didn't tell her. She knew where Lance lived, and she was acting like one of those moms. You know, the kind that would take on a Navy SEAL if she found out he'd messed with her boy. I told her it was some guys I didn't know. She wanted to drive me to the ER, but I refused. So she bandaged me the best she could and tanked me full of pain meds. My head was so sore it hurt to rest it on my pillow, and I was sure I had some broken ribs. No matter how I turned, I couldn't get comfortable on my mattress, my body throbbing and my mind racing. There was no doubt now. I'd witnessed Dan in a full-blown possession. I tried telling myself it was rage, not Dan, who'd attempted to beat me to death today. But I couldn't stop blaming Dan. Lance, too. I finally fell asleep, but woke around midnight to answer my cell. Mrs. Griner, of all people, calling from out of town. "Have you heard from Rayanne? She's not returning our calls, and we're worried sick." Come to think of it, she never came back to check on me. That wasn't like her at all. Her mom's voice shook with distress. "Our neighbor saw her late this afternoon, and she said she was headed to the woods of all places. You have any idea why?" "No, I dropped my phone. Please tell me she didn't." Chapter 38. It was painful to get dressed. I hobbled out the door and drove my motorcycle like a madman to the dirt path in the woods that leads to the water well, where eyes could be opened or sealed forever. I still didn't understand the old man's explanation about motives, but I knew the outcome of drinking that water was severe, no matter the motive. When I saw Rayanne's car parked by the dirt trail, I nearly went into cardiac arrest. I grabbed my big flashlight and charged as fast as I could through the maze of towering pines, dodging fallen branches and scrawny shrubs and slippery rocks. Rayanne didn't know where the clearing was, but she did know what to look for and what it would sound like, thanks to me. I made it there and shined my light in every direction. No sign of her. I shouted her name, bracing my aching ribcage, unwilling to consider that I might be too late. As I approached the well, I stepped on something. A yellow cup, the same kind the Griners kept in their kitchen cabinet. "Rayanne!" I ran around the perimeter, shining my light in sweeping arcs, desperate to find her yet terrified that I'd see her body. Finding nothing, I walked back in the direction of her car, taking a close look along the path. Minutes later, my world flatlined. There she was, in the brush, lying on her side, her back to me, totally still. I dropped to my knees behind her and gently pulled her over onto her back, eyes closed, no signs of life. Then, "Owen?" It was so faint it was almost like I'd imagined it. But her eyelids parted. I let out the biggest sigh of relief of my lifetime, then bent down and pressed my cheek against hers. She was freezing. There was no time. I scooped her into my arms. She winced and grabbed her stomach.
It hurts.
I know, just hold on, Ray. I'm getting you out of here. I hoisted her off the ground, then walked the best I could in the dark, my injuries screaming at me. The walk was bumpy and exhausting, and she moaned the whole time, eventually mumbling,
"Are you mad at me?"
"No, I'm mad at myself." I pulled her keys from her pocket and lowered her into the passenger seat of her car. I worried she'd be dead by the time I walked around to the driver's side. When I slid into the seat, she was pale, shivering, and hardly able to keep her eyes open, but alive. I pulled onto the road and floored it. She couldn't quit rubbing her gut and forehead, just like I'd done, just like I'd seen Walton Marshall do.
"I didn't know it would hurt this bad."
She faced away from me, knees bent into her chest. "I'm taking you to the hospital."
"What?"
She managed to angle toward me.
"I just need to sleep it off like you did."
"No, Rayanne, you can't." I felt like I was going to throw up, only something much worse than vomit was about to come out. A heinous confession. I waited until we passed through a brightly lit intersection and faded back into the cloak of night. She reached and dug her nails into my arm, groaning. "Ray, you're going to hate me once and for all for this, but there's something I haven't told you. I haven't told a single soul. But I have to tell you now. It's a matter of life and death." I swallowed the lump in my throat and smothered an avalanche of emotion. "This is really hard to say, but you deserve to know the truth. Rayanne, there's a very strong chance that you may not survive this." She pulled her cupped hand from her mouth.
"What are you—"
"It's my fault. Walton Marshall, they're dead because of me." I couldn't help but yell. "They wouldn't quit insulting me, so I took them to the water, dared them to drink it. And it killed them, and it's probably doing the same thing to you." I gasped it through a stop sign, jaws clenched. I could actually feel the blood vessels in my eyes throbbing. She let go of my arm and sank back into a ball in the seat, shaking with sobs. My confession had destroyed her, just like I thought it would. "I would ask your forgiveness, but there's no forgiving this, Rayanne. I know that. You begged me to be honest with you, and if I would have just had the guts to own up to what I did, you wouldn't be in danger right now." The pain of my selfish choices was sharp and deep, like a knife in my chest. I wiped my face, then reached for her hand, stroking and squeezing her fingers. She didn't squeeze back. "You didn't deserve this." I said it over and over. Then finally, the ER. I waited in the lobby, slouched over in my chair, shoes buried in death dust. Might as well call it what it was. A nurse got in touch with Rayanne's parents, and they were trying to get a flight home. They'd already lost one child. Surely fate wouldn't make them bury two. I hoped. A doctor approached and questioned me. Not Dan's dad, to my relief. "She keeps saying it was just water, but that doesn't make sense." "It is water, but it can be harmful." I wanted him to understand so they didn't chalk it up to something as basic as the flu and release her.
"How do you know?"
I struggled to maintain eye contact.
"I just know."
He looked me over, furrowing his brow at the sight of my busted-up face.
"What happened to you?"
"Some guys..." He turned my chin, taking a closer look. "You were attacked?" I nodded. "But it's her I'm worried about." He instructed me to follow him, then led me through some double doors into the ER. He motioned for me to sit on a stiff chair in a small room that smelled like Band-Aids and alcohol, and he made it clear I was to stay there. Finally, he left me alone. I couldn't sit. I paced the room, agonizing. It hurt to walk, but I deserved it. From day one, all Rayanne had wanted was to help me, and now that desire was destroying her. I heard the doctor say my name, and when I peeked out the door, he was pointing in my direction. I scrambled back, trying to gather my runaway thoughts. There was no way out, of the room or my circumstances. I faced the door and squared my shoulders, waiting. Seconds passed. Then Detective Benny found me. I'd never been inside a squad car before. From the back seat, I could see Detective Benny and Officer McFarland through squares formed by metal bars, a barrier to keep deviants and thugs and liars like me away from law enforcement. We were parked outside the hospital, engine running, both officers waiting for an explanation as to how yet another person connected to me was suffering. This whole ordeal had gone way too far, and I'd do anything if it could somehow help Rayanne survive. But would they even believe me if I told the truth? Benny turned and scowled from the passenger seat.
"Why don't you tell us what's really going on, son, so we can help you?"
I had to give up my old story, even without my lawyer there. I took a deep breath, held it a while, then... I have been living a lie, and I'm sick of it. Detective Benny pulled out a digital recorder and motioned for me to keep going. I told him about the well, how I drank from it and felt like my body was shutting down. But the next day, I explained, I woke up completely fine. Still sick to my stomach, but fine. I can't say why for sure, but it bothered me. I'd expected to die, you know, have everyone grieve my death. But instead, I had to face another ordinary, depressing day. That's when I started making things up.
"What kind of things?" Benny said.
I worked to look him in the eye. I pretended to see people wearing shackles, like they were enslaved by aliens or demons or something, and I was the only one who could see it. That, and also chains and gross cords draping from people's heads. At first, it was cool, like a thrilling thing in my mind, but then...
Then what?
I got carried away and started telling people like it was real. I even said I saw evil beings attacking them. Officer McFarland glared over his shoulder. I know it's weird, but it's not like I'm crazy. I just liked the attention, the excitement, I guess. Detective Benny shook his head.
Did you tell Walt and Marshall these stories?
Not exactly. They heard it from someone else, then they brought it up the day we went to the park. They came down on me so hard about it, I wanted to make them pay. But not with their lives, I swear. I thought if I took them to the woods and gave them a sip of the water, they'd get sick like I did. I never meant for anything worse than that to happen. Benny huffed.
Why'd you keep this from us?
I tried to swallow, but it felt like I had a wad of cotton in my mouth. I got scared. Even though I had no idea that the water could be deadly, I was afraid that if it somehow now turned out to be, it would look like I meant to kill them. I shifted in my seat, weighing what I was about to say next. And I was ashamed, really embarrassed about how out of control my fantasies had become. I couldn't bring myself to come clean. Benny wanted to know why Rayanne had drunk the water. And I explained that she'd wanted to see the supernatural stuff like me, even though I'd warned her over and over not to do it. She actually believed my stories. She believed them so much that she searched for the water and drank it, knowing it would make her sick. Officer McFarland put the car into drive, and the detective made a phone call, arranging for some forensics people to meet us. I sat back in the worn seat, looking out at familiar street signs and intersections, mostly empty this time of night. How had my life come to this? My small world so intense and complicated, and Rayanne's life hanging in the balance. We parked in the woods, and when Benny's team arrived, I led them to the infamous spot. A lady in gloves retrieved the yellow cup and put it in a plastic bag. They found a sports drink bottle in the brush and bagged it, too. Had to be Marshall's or Walt's. They hovered over the well, raising and lowering the bucket, collecting numerous samples of the water that had destroyed my life and annihilated others. About the only good that had come from drinking it was that it had led me to Rayanne. But even that was a train wreck now. A forensic guy shined his flashlight down into the well, then back at the bucket several times. He finally spoke up. "This well looks dry." The woman next to him smirked. "Clearly it's not." She tucked the water samples into a bag. The guy shined his light back and forth a few more times but kept his mouth shut. "If there was any trace of toxins on anything, I'd be faced with proving it wasn't my doing, that I wasn't some kind of serial killer. If it was clean, I'd likely walk away. But if Rayanne didn't survive, it wouldn't matter if they labeled me a sociopath and locked me up forever. They let me leave on my motorcycle, still parked near the clearing, and it was almost 4 in the morning when I got back to the hospital. The walk to the front desk was unnerving, like I was shuffling down a narrow plank, about to be shoved into the deep ocean or allowed to stay on board, depending on the answer to my question. "Excuse me, how is Rayanne Griner?" The lady scanned her computer monitor. The longest 30 seconds of my life. "All I can tell you is that she's been transferred to a recovery room." My upper body collapsed onto the countertop like a wet noodle, my forehead pressed against the chilled granite. "Thank you, God." It rolled off my tongue without any thought. A cliché, really. "Visiting hours aren't until 9 a.m., the lady said. I went home and took a long, very hot shower. Death dust doesn't wash off, by the way. It has to erode off of both clothing and skin. I tried not to think about where it came from. At exactly 9 a.m., I sat in a chair next to Rayanne's bed, scooting close enough to touch her hand, but careful not to wake her. The color had returned to her face. It made me smile. I watched her breathe, the soft, rhythmic sound like a melody in my ears. I'd never had feelings for someone like this, not this much or this strong. Sitting there watching her, an unfamiliar certainty took hold of my will and emotions. I'd spend the rest of my life with this girl if she'd let me. If she'd let me. I'd really blown it this time. I leaned in and stroked her cheek with the back of my hand, taking in every curve and detail of her face. Her lips, easy for the taking, but I'd stolen enough from her. It was May 21st, 2 days before the suspected mass attack. But I couldn't worry about that right now. I eased back into my chair and waited for Rayanne's blue eyes to open. Unfortunately, I couldn't stop my own eyelids from drifting shut. The next thing I knew, Rayanne was cowering in the corner of the room, glaring at me. I stood. "Ray, I'm so glad you're okay." I stepped toward her, reaching out, but she wedged herself deeper into the corner. "What is it?" I took 2 more steps, and she sank to the floor. "Don't... stay away." "What's the matter?" I took another step, and she shielded her head. "I see it." "See what?" Slowly, she lowered her arms, then pointed at me. You have a shackle, Owen, around your neck. Chapter 39. I raced out of the hospital like I was on fire. In a way, I was. Once I learned that I was shackled like masses of other doomed human beings, My last few shreds of hope went up in flames.
What a sick joke. I was on a mission to figure out how to free others, and all along my soul was caught in the same unrelenting trap. Once home, I rushed upstairs and stared at my pathetic reflection in the bathroom mirror. I was cut and bruised from yesterday's beating, but other than that, everything looked normal. I could see others' bondage with such clarity, but my own eluded me. I stumbled into my bedroom feeling like I weighed a ton, like gravity had a heightened hold on me. And the one person I would normally run to at a time like this now considered me a monster. Rayanne would want to stay as far away from me as she could. Probably seek out other glowing people and pity the rest of us from a distance. The thought came to me to take my life, but I shoved it out of my mind. Molech would come claim my soul someday, but I wasn't going to serve it to him on a silver platter. In my condition, death was a worst-case scenario, of epic proportions. I sank to the floor and wrapped my arms around my frostbitten gut, imagining another form of escape. I had to leave. Leave Masonville behind and go somewhere. Anywhere but here. I'd start a new life, but this time, I'd keep my stories of terror all to myself. No friends, no attachments, no dreams of happiness. Just survival. I knew full well that my new plan would likely land me under a highway overpass, filthy and stinky, swatting at creepers. But if that was my fate, so be it. I wasn't willing to stick around and keep exhausting myself trying to take on creepers and rescue people. Who was I kidding? If Molech and his underlings were planning to rain down a holocaust tomorrow, there was nothing I could do. Maybe if I glowed, I'd discover a way to fight back, eventually expel him from Masonville for good. But no, I was just another shackled freak. I got to my feet and started throwing clothes into the biggest duffel bag I owned. I decided I'd drive east and see where I ended up. Maybe I'd leave the country at some point, settle down in a different hemisphere. I had access to the funds in the savings account my mom had built up for me. I figured I could withdraw some cash and live off that for a while until I got a job doing whatever lonely, uneducated, tormented people do. I knew better than to think I could outrun the creepers or my sadistic sightings, but at least I could remove myself from the constant torture of seeing people I cared about be abused. And I could stay away from everyone who hated my guts and, quite honestly, never wanted to see me again anyway. There was just one thing I had to do before I started my non-life. I learned Rayanne had been released from the hospital, so I went to her house. Just showed up unannounced and rang the doorbell. She flung the door open. "Rayanne, you'll never have to look at me again if you'll just do one..." She hugged me so tight, I almost fell forward. Then she jerked away fast. "They're freezing." My chains. I felt hideous like a metal-clad cyclops. "Owen, I'm so sorry for the way I reacted to you this morning, but don't worry. We'll get you out of that shackle. You'll see. And oh my goodness, the creepers are terrifying. You told me they were awful, but I never dreamed they would be this horrific. But you're right. They do avoid me and my family, thank God. And I can see the glow, Owen. It's all around my feet." She lifted one foot, then the other, reveling in her new superhuman senses. She didn't seem to be holding a grudge against me. Still, I kept my head down. "I need you to do one last thing for me." "Last thing? Please. Tell me the names on the cuffs of my chains. And the words on my cords. I've got to know." She crossed her arms, then pressed a bald fist to her mouth, as nervous as I had been weeks ago to examine my mom's. "I know it's disgusting." I turned my back to her. "But I need you to do this." I waited, as tense as a convicted felon facing sentencing. "You have four chains." The mere thought made me weak in the knees. "What do they say?" She dropped to the ground,
The first one says Susan Lynn Edmonds, my mother. Next, it's Lance Gregory Wilson. No surprise there. I had no way to prove it, but that chain was probably less than 24 hours old, attached during the few hours I'd slept. Keep going. Daniel Quentin Bradford. Dan, of course, I popped my knuckles. And the last one? Stephen James Grayson. I drew a blank. That name meant absolutely nothing to me except the middle name was the same as mine. I kept my back to her. My cords now. She stood, and I felt her step closer, studying my head. "Don't touch them," I said. "Just read." Then came the character assassination. Deceptive, unrepentant, proud, cynical, lustful, judgmental. Six chords? That was practically twice the average. I balled my fists, anger boiling so hot it was all I could do not to walk over and bash Rayanne's garage door. Everything in me wanted to defend myself, launch into lengthy justifications about how those labels were all wrong, and I was seriously misunderstood, misjudged. But I recognized that for what it was. I knew from living with my mother that human nature despises admitting guilt. I was no different. If the powers that be pronounced those as my transgressions, what could I do? I turned to leave. "Wait," Rayanne called out after me. "Where are you going?" I climbed onto my motorcycle and began walking my bike back, out of the driveway. She tried to grab the handlebars but missed. "Stop! We need to talk. I need your help with all this." I wasn't trying to abandon her. I was doing her a favor, ridding her of my inferior presence. And I had to get home and settle something with my mother right now. I didn't allow myself to look in the rearview mirror. Just sped off. "Look at you. So full of selfish pride." My own thoughts turned against me, allying with the dark side. "Shut up." As I argued back and forth with myself, I was aware I'd plummeted to an all-time low, into the hostile mental territory where psychopaths and schizophrenics live. More confirmation that I needed to leave town and live an isolated existence. I burst through the front door of my house like a SWAT team officer and walked straight over to my mother. She'd been working on her computer with her back to me, but turned, startled. I dropped to the floor, inspecting each of her numerous cuffs among the mess of chains. "What are you doing?" Sure enough, on the eighth cuff, I found it. Chapter 40. "Who is Stephen James Grayson?" She stood, leaning so far away from me that she was practically on top of her desk, eyes wide. "Who is Stephen James Grayson? Tell me, Mom!" My newfound admiration for her took a sudden back seat to my frustration over her never-ending secrecy. She started crying. "Where did you..." "It doesn't matter, Mom. Just tell me who he is and what his connection is to us." She walked away. "It's complicated." I followed her. "Try me." She suddenly started sobbing uncontrollably, turning and collapsing into my arms. But I pulled away, not willing to let her use me as a crutch. "I'm so ashamed. I have so much regret. If I could go back, I swear to you I would do things differently, son. I swear." I knew now what was going on here. Exactly who that man was. I stepped within an inch of her. "Are you going to tell me who Stephen Grayson is, or do I have to say it?" She caught her breath, but still didn't have the guts to speak. "He's my father, isn't he?" She sank backward onto the sofa. I bent down and vented in her face. You told me his name was Robert. Why? I don't understand.
Because I promised his parents.
What are you talking about?
My body was shivering, even though I felt like I was burning with rage.
She asked me to give her a moment while she grabbed some tissues from a box across the room. I paced in circles, hands digging through my hair. She motioned for me to sit, then lowered herself onto the floor by my feet.
I loved your father very much. We were young and in love and anxious to get married. Neither of us cared about having some big elaborate wedding, so we eloped, just the two of us. I never intended to get pregnant right away, but I did.
And he left, Mom. I already know this.
No.
Her face crumpled with grief.
I was afraid, nervous about how he'd take the news. He was attending an Ivy League university, and we barely had two pennies to rub together. He had high hopes of becoming a successful doctor someday, like his father. I knew his mother wasn't very fond of me, but I decided to confide in her about the pregnancy, thinking perhaps his parents would be supportive and offer to help us through what was sure to be a challenging time. But instead, she was cruel to me. She told me I was not an acceptable match for her son, even accused me of getting pregnant just to trap Stephen so he'd have to stay married to me. Oh, that infuriated me. I spent the next few days agonizing and started thinking perhaps they were right. He deserved someone more refined and intelligent than me, someone from a stable, wealthy family, someone who wouldn't hold him back. And I convinced myself he would resent me for the pregnancy. That week, while Stephen was at school, his parents came over. Drove across three states to come talk to me. They said they had the perfect solution and made me an offer that would benefit everyone. What kind of offer?
She turned her face away.
They agreed to pay me a sum of money every year for 18 years, ensuring you had a good childhood and received a quality college education. It was enough for me to get my education, too.
Under what condition, Mom?
She slouched over, still avoiding my face. Providing that I left town, legally terminated the marriage, and never said another word to their son, ever.
So, you're saying my dad didn't...
I couldn't bring myself to accept it.
He never knew about you, Owen. I'm so sorry. Your dad never knew he had a son.
She shook with each violent sob while I sat there, doubled over now, piecing together a few of the countless loose ends that had troubled me since childhood. I stood and released nearly two decades of pent-up anger and confusion.
Now I understand why you cried for 3 days when I told you I wanted to become a doctor. I was following in the footsteps of my father and his father, and I didn't even know it. And now I get how we've always had plenty of money, and why there aren't any pictures of my dad.
You didn't want me to know what he looks like. You didn't want to run the risk that I might go looking for him and tell him what you'd done. That's why you kept his real name from me.
Please, forgive me.
Her voice quaked as she begged on her knees. I did what I thought was best at the time. I know now that his parents were wrong, and I should have told the truth and trusted Stephen to love me and accept me, to accept us. I just couldn't at the time, and then it was too late to go back. He eventually remarried.
She wiped her soaked face with her sleeve, then made the most wretched confession I'd ever heard in my entire life.
We needed the money, Owen.
I dropped to the floor and grabbed her shoulders.
How dare you? What I've needed is a father.
She wailed, then pleaded with me again.
I told myself that when you grew up, I would help you find him, and you could know each other. I had no idea he wouldn't make it.
What did you say?
I let go of her, more bruised inside now than out.
What happened to my father?
She struggled to talk through involuntary gasps.
About a year ago, he traveled to a dangerous part of the world in Africa, and he was never heard from again. He is presumed...
Well, They think he's likely...
She was too weak of a person to say it. Dead.
I am so, so sorry, honey.
She reached out to hug me, but I twisted away.
Can you please forgive me?
Just hours ago, I'd made a shamed confession to Rayanne. But my dishonesty spanned a matter of weeks. My mom had been lying to me my entire life.
You expect me to just let this go?
I grabbed the last of my things and strapped them to my bike. She chased after me.
Where are you going?
I'm taking off for a few hours. By the time she realized I was gone for good, there'd be no finding me. She stood in the driveway bawling, begging me not to go. I drove away, content to never speak to her again. Just like she'd done to my father. Chapter 41. My resolve to leave forever didn't waver as I drove beyond Masonville city limits on a one-way trip to isolation. It felt like the gray storm clouds brewing above my head were escorting me, eager for me to leave. Now that I'd heard my mom's confession, even the scenic Texas hills along the winding highway looked hideous to me, like splotchy lumps lining a crooked spine. I drove for miles, lost in thought, trying to reprogram my brain to the idea that it was my mother who had abandoned my father, not the other way around. All this time I'd believed he resented me, thought so little of me that he didn't care to know even one thing about me. And now that I knew the truth, it was too late to see what he would really think of me. By late afternoon, after a few unsuccessful stops to clear my mind, I reached San Antonio and took a random exit heading north. I noticed there were just as many shackled people in this part of the state as there were back in Masonville. And there were creepers scattered around, not all concentrated like they were at my school, but still haunting this region. After about 70 more country miles, I ended up at a mediocre motel in Kerrville, Texas. A hick town where people weren't likely to look for me, assuming anyone would come looking. I dropped my bag on the dilapidated bed and stood silent a while. I was supposed to start college in the fall, begin my journey toward medical school. Instead, I'd fallen out of life. The ambitious young guy with no end to his potential was spent at 18, limited at every turn. I bought my dinner from a vending machine and yanked my motel curtains shut. Why watch the sunset? Nothing was majestic anymore. My antique room actually had Wi-Fi, but I wasn't ready to research my father. My worst fear was that we'd look alike, that I'd see myself in him, with no chance to show myself to him. I checked my phone. A flood of voice messages. Some from my mom, others from Rayanne, then one from Detective Benny.
"The lab results are in," he said.
I dropped onto the stiff mattress and listened so hard that my eyes pressed shut. "We found no trace of contaminants or toxins on any of the specimens collected at the site." His tone was flat, zero enthusiasm. "And the well water is pure enough to drink. Pure enough to bottle and sell, imagine that." He paused so long I thought maybe that was it.
"So, Owen, we have no evidence to prosecute you."
He cleared his throat.
"At this time."
I let out a really long sigh. The jacked up water had pulled it off again, managed to conceal its toxic, transcendent nature from analytical minds. Guess I was a runaway now, not a fugitive. Jess texted me that night to let me know she'd followed through and reported Dan to the police.
"Good," I texted back. "You did the right thing."
I had a miserable night's sleep, thinking nonstop about all the brutal ways my father could have possibly been killed in Africa. Adding to the torment, I kept rehearsing the accusations etched on my 6 chords, handwritten by creepers. I couldn't stop rubbing the back of my scalp and wincing. The next morning, my ringing cell woke me, a number I didn't recognize. Another voicemail. I played it and was surprised to hear his voice. Masonville's finest. Dan's abusive father, Dr. Bradford. He obviously didn't know yet that his son was being charged with a crime. Or maybe he did and he'd disowned him completely. Or figured he could get some big-name attorney to make it all go away. Dr. Bradford practically begged me to reconsider allowing him to mentor me. It's what your grandparents wanted, his voicemail said. I am prepared to teach you things you'll never learn from someone else. Powerful things. It made sense to me now, why my mom's parents had willed their estate to me. Even though they were dead, they were still recruiting me, luring me to Masonville so Dr. Bradford could single me out and entice me into their sinister world. I wasn't exactly a God-fearing person, but I knew better than to get caught up in that occult stuff, even before I could see Hell's Creatures. And how stupid would I be to let someone who raised a son like Dan be any kind of father figure to me? I deleted his message, then showered and left the motel. It was a long day of driving unfamiliar roads, aimlessly mulling over where and how to begin my secluded life. Before moving to Masonville, I had felt so in control of my decisions. Now I was like the ball in a pinball machine. At nightfall, I sat in the corner of a Starbucks, clutching my laptop and a grande vanilla latte, extra hot with no foam. I marveled that the dreaded date was nearly here. 5-2-3. Mass attack day. I remained content to leave the situation in the hands of fate. I'd watch from the sidelines, which in my case meant I'd tune into the news tomorrow to see if anything really even happened. I sipped my drink, plagued by curiosity about my father. How tall was he? What kind of doctor? What kind of man? I tapped my fingers on my closed laptop. Should I? Eventually, I opened my Mac. It felt weird typing his name. Waiting for the search engine to populate, I could feel my heart pounding in my neck. Erratic, uncomfortable thumps, like a bass drum, was lodged in my throat. Then, just like that, I saw him. Images of my father's face. It took my breath away. My eyes pooled before I even had a chance to register the emotion. Had I run into him in person, I swear I would have known he was my father. The resemblance was undeniable. I looked a lot more like him than I did my mother, a realization that hurt just as much as I'd feared it would. The sense of loss was crushing. We'd probably have been the most important persons in each other's lives, if only... I had to look away, take some deep breaths, more sips of my drink. I spent hours there reading all about him, articles about his humanitarian efforts, his bio on multiple physicians' websites, the reports that he'd gone missing. He was a cardiologist with a thriving practice, and he frequently traveled to third-world countries to perform surgeries for impoverished people. He was married and... I nearly choked on my second cup of coffee. He had 2 daughters. I wasn't an only child after all. That was hard to comprehend. What I read about his disappearance matched what my mother had told me. He'd traveled to Uganda 14 months ago and hadn't been seen or heard from since. Some of his belongings had been found strewn in the brush outside a village ransacked by a militant regime. Among his items, a blood-soaked shirt. I had to take a break, walk around, and pretend I actually wanted to look at a display of coffee mugs. I asked for an ice water, and didn't sit until I'd downed the whole thing and chewed every piece of ice. His wife was an attractive lady, a blonde with a pretty smile. I imagined she was devastated. Their daughters, too. For the life of me, I couldn't envision him ever having been in love with my mother. He looked nothing like the type she brought home. Even though it pained me, I liked reading about him, his accomplishments, all the ways he helped people. I clicked on an article written by a reporter in his hometown of Tulsa, Oklahoma, published less than a week before he vanished. My father acknowledged that he was going into dangerous territory, and when asked why he would go to such great lengths to help small, remote tribal groups, his answer surprised me. "I'm going to serve and meet their medical needs the best I can, because I want to show them God's love, something I believe every person on earth deserves." My dad was a man of faith? It had never crossed my mind that he might be religious. Still, I admired his willingness to go above and beyond for others. Way beyond. The more I read, reciting the words he'd once spoken, the more I wished so bad that I could have met him, looked him in the face and told him I exist. There's nothing I wouldn't have given to have even 1 minute with him. A few seconds. My father had been brave and selfless and lived every day with purpose and passion. Although the pictures didn't allow me to see it, I was sure he had been a light. If I could have called him up and made plans to go see him, if he were still alive and well, all of this would have felt too good to be true. But the fact that I'd come this far only to still be worlds away from him was like torture. There wasn't a single statement of his I read that didn't move me somehow. But it was the final quote I came across that completely rocked my world. I typed it into my cell notes app, word for word, then tucked my phone in my pocket. I threw my backpack over my shoulder, then walked away. Away from Starbucks, away from my motorcycle, away from my pointless life. I traipsed deep into a nearby field of tall grass and buzzing insects with just the moon to light the way. I don't recall the specifics of all that ran through my mind, only that something was stirring in me, something new and strong. I eventually spied a lonely boulder and made my way to it. I climbed up, gripping the cool stone, hoisting myself on top, then stood and looked up at the massive canvas of stars. I was about as far removed from civilization as I'd ever been. I pulled out my cell, opened the notes app, then read the words out loud. My father's response when asked why he was willing to make such extreme sacrifices and risk his life for others, especially knowing there was no way he could help them all. "The fact that I've seen and empathize with their suffering tells me I'm called to intervene and help. I refuse to sit back or run in fear and leave it up to someone else to try and save them." How was it possible that his words, spoken over a year ago, applied directly to me, like they were meant for me at that very moment? It hit me all at once. What a coward I'd been, running off and leaving Rayanne and my classmates when I knew full well that an evil army led by a demented commander was likely preparing for their destruction tomorrow. I knew what I had to do. More than that, I finally realized how to do it. Of all the tactics I'd tried against the creepers, I'd overlooked one of the most powerful, obvious weapons. And it was time to use it. There was no guarantee I'd survive, much less rescue anyone. But my father's example had changed everything. I understood now. Lots of men fight to defend themselves. A real man fights for those who can't defend themselves, even if it costs him everything. Chapter 42. I had climbed down off the rock and was jogging back to my bike when I saw something that stopped me in my tracks. Towering in the distance on top of an enormous hill was a massive illuminated cross, tall as a high-rise building. It stood firm as a soldier against the dark backdrop of the night sky. I wasn't one to believe in signs, but that didn't seem like a coincidence. I rushed to my motel room and threw everything in my bag. It was nearly 5 in the morning, but I texted Rayanne anyway. "So sorry I left you. I'm coming home. Whatever happens tomorrow, I'll be there with you. I won't let you down this time." It was around 7 in the morning when I finally turned onto my street, too full of adrenaline to feel the effects of no sleep. There stood Rayanne in my driveway, shielding her eyes from the sun. She waved like a spaz the instant she saw me. I parked, then hurried toward her, grabbing her and hugging her tight. I let go fast, though, and stepped back. I still felt hideous. "I know I look horrible to you."
"Don't say that."
She moved close to me again. "I'm so glad you're home." I wasn't expecting that kind of welcome, not after the way I'd left her. "I'm sorry I walked out on you, Ray. Especially now when you need me the most. That was wrong. I was wrong." Her response was like a splash of cool water across my thirsty soul.
"All is forgiven, Owen."
I stood there, gazing down into her adorable face, blown away by her mercy. I reached over and slid my fingers between hers. "You're my favorite person in the whole world, Ray." That's when my mom came flying out of the house. "Owen James Edmonds, where have you been?" She pointed in my face. "Mom, I just got off the phone with the police. I was begging them to start looking for you." I was still furious with her. Couldn't even bring myself to look at her. But to get her off my back, I swore I'd never disappear like that again. Minutes later, Rayanne and I were in her car, headed toward our school. She reached from the driver's seat and touched a gentle finger to a bruise on my cheek. The swelling in my lip had gone down, but the cuts were still stinging, and my left eye had dark purple under it.
"Why'd they want to hurt you?"
I instinctively lowered my head. "They blame me for Walton Marshall." It was awkward bringing up their names with her. "You know I never meant for them to..." She rested her hand on the middle console over mine.
"Of course."
I exhaled, hoping to never bring it up again. That lasted about a second.
"I've been thinking about the well, Owen, how drinking from it affects people, and I think it comes down to motive."
Interesting. In all the craziness, I hadn't had time to fill her in on what the old man had told me. Yet here she was, piecing things together on her own.
"Think about it," she said. "Why do you drink the water in the first place?"
I really did have to think about it. The old man said I'd get answers. I wanted to know the truth.
"A pure motive, right?"
I nodded.
"So why do you think Walton Marshall drank it?"
The horrid memory was as fresh as the wounds on my face, but even more painful. The insults they'd thrown at me. The fatal water I'd handed them in return. It was about showing me up, I guess, and proving how brave they were. I angled toward her.
"What about you? Why'd you drink it?"
She looked at me.
"So I could help you. Because I care about you."
My stomach dropped like I'd leaped out of an airplane.
"Get it?"
"Get what?" Her sweet comment had derailed my concentration.
"You and I drank the water for selfless reasons, but Walton Marshall's motive was self-centered. I'm not saying they deserve to die, not at all. But the motive makes all the difference, I think."
"But how could motive affect a person's bodily response to a substance?"
"You still don't understand?"
I really didn't.
"Whatever's in that water isn't physical, Owen. It's spiritual. Different from natural laws."
She acted like there was nothing even slightly strange about what she'd just said, and I was dense for not picking up on it, too.
"It's like this."
It was all she could do to keep her hands on the steering wheel. "Drink the water with a pure heart, you're exposed to the truth. Drink it with the wrong heart, The truth exposes you. I was impressed, but before I could say it, I know what I'm talking about. She lifted her chin in total confidence, a Rayanne trademark I found irresistibly attractive. By the way, she said, I spoke with several lights at school and I told them to be on alert today in case I need them. Didn't they want to know why? Of course. I told them I could sense evil forces and I might need their help warding them off. And they believed you? Well, yeah. They're lights. It's the shackled ones who don't believe. Her comment socked me in the gut, but I knew it was true. Rayanne made the final turn on the way to our school. How's your stomach? I asked. It quit hurting yesterday. I was happy for her. My stomach had never shed the queasy chill. The closer we got to Masonville High, the more my nerves kicked in. Rayanne started taking long, drawn-out breaths. I suddenly second-guessed bringing her here. I understood that out of the two of us, she was much more equipped to stand up to the enemy. But if things went tragically wrong today, if she got hurt because of me again, I'd never recover. Rayanne, maybe you should let me do this. Alone. She pressed down harder on the gas pedal. You need me today, Owen. We were nearly to the school when I asked her to pull over. She stopped and looked up at me. I need you tomorrow, too, Ray. I cupped her face. And every day after that. So be careful, all right? She nodded, then cut back fast into the flow of traffic. It occurred to me that maybe we'd read too much into the creeper notes, misinterpreted them completely, and there was no attack at all planned for today. But one glance at our school and there was no doubt. Something was definitely going down here. Something catastrophic. Chapter 43. Our school was surrounded by eerie, unnaturally straight rows of creepers stretching from one end of the campus to the other, lurking behind the school door, lining both sides, and spewing all the way from the entrance doors into the parking lot. Hundreds of them standing inches apart, peering down each other's reeking necks. Their hands were crossed at the wrists and pressed against their sunken chests. It reminded me of how dead people in horror movies are positioned in graves. More creepers were pouring in from every direction like rats, then filing into place like they'd rehearsed their formation before. They stood so still they looked like corpses, their tattered garments hanging limp despite gusts of wind. Rayanne was at a loss. This is it. The sheer number of them. I drew a deep breath, determined not to panic. I refused to sit back or run in fear and leave it up to someone else to try and save these people. We parked in the back of the lot, then stood by Rayanne's car like it was some sort of protective home base. Surely an army of watchmen would arrive any minute. Shoot, I'd settle for a handful, even one. But all we saw were more creepers flocking to the scene like demented zombies ready to feed. How long do you think they're going to stand there like that? I'd never seen Rayanne so nervous. Not that I blamed her. Until each nasty one of them is accounted for, I imagine. Students were arriving in droves now. I heard a familiar voice and looked back. Sure enough, Lance was headed toward the school with a group, guys who used to be my friends. He passed by me like I didn't exist. Just as well. There'd be no convincing him he was walking into a malicious mob. And did he deserve a warning after what he'd done to me? But there was Riley, the shy freshman I'd talked to in the cafeteria who'd been linked to Hopeless. She was creeper-free today, but some senior guy had his arm around her. Riley, I motioned for her to come talk to me. She walked over, a big smile on her face. She'd gotten her braces